Oh, I might just punch the mic again so we can start out the same way.
It's gone now. It actually didn't sound as bad as I thought it did, but...
I hit play, I reached over to face the mic, and I punched the mic, so like, as soon as the recording started, you hear, kaboom! And...
Yeah, it was a little bit off-putting. Anyway, hey!
Hey, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Don't do that, don't do that.
No?
Where I sit, out on the sales floor, they pump in Christmas music.
Oh no, you have to listen to Christmas music?
It's not that I have to listen to Christmas music, right? Because I'm fine with Christmas music. I'm not fine with constant Christmas music on a loop for a month and a half.
That's what I meant. You have to listen to the... Oh.
Yeah. The same things over and over. How many times do I have to hear that pa-rum-pum-pum-pum song?
Oh, and you're listening to the probably the extra religious Christmas music, no? You don't get Santa Baby, I'm sure.
No. But it's just a radio station, so it's not like they tune to, like, you know... It's not like there's a sort of Christian radio, and then there's a super Christian radio for Christmas songs only. But yeah, no, it's the worst. So it's kind of like I'm... Fortunately, I'm only there 2 days a week. And when I am there, what I mostly do is I put on my headphones. I don't listen to music much because I find that either distracting or I'm not a music kid anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to just static. I go to a YouTube that's just white noise, and I listen to that, and that is because that it just blanks everything out. So.
That's interesting. I've never tried like just turning on static to see how that affects my focus or whether.
Yeah, yeah.
I would think like the pressure on my ears would get tiresome. It would
after about an hour or so, you like to put your heads off and just, you know, get by. But
I think I would rather like listening to like jungle sounds or something instead of white noise.
No, I mean the reason why white noise is good is because it's regular. So eventually, after about an hour or so, you kind of tune it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, so, you're listening to white noise? That sounds more like pink noise. It's not quite as harsh as white noise.
It's just white noise.
Okay.
I'd turn it down, you know, like something like that.
See if you can find a thing, white noise versus pink noise. And, here, actually, jack in so everyone can listen.
I believe they can hear it just fine.
But if we're going to be talking about the difference between white noise and pink noise, you should jack in.
Jacking in. Ooh, it's like The Matrix. So here's your white noise. So yeah, that's, you know.
Longtime listeners of the pre-show will remember that I had to make...
Yeah, more or less the same, I guess.
I made loops of white noise. Or pink noise, actually, because I found pink noise a little less abrasive on the ears. And that would calm Allison's colic down. I initially found it by standing in front of the sink with running water.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's very wasteful. So I got online, found a sound clip of pink noise, and just made like a 10-minute loop of it. I would just play it to her.
Well, now what you can do is, I mean, like, there's like 9 hours of pink noise, baby crying, released tinnitus. Yeah, so obviously there's something to that. But yeah, I just had that white noise thing, but yeah, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like pure static from like a TV. It's just generated.
Never thought of listening to that if I needed to like focus in on something and like zone out to distraction. I'll have to give that a try sometime.
I find it wonderful because it's not like that, but I also have somebody who makes noises in the cube next to me, so you hear those kind of noises, sort of like that, but it's more like that. Uh-huh. It's that, and it's the worst. Just because, you know, if it happens once in a blue moon, it's fine. But I mean, it happens every 10-15 minutes. And the weird thing is, this is a relatively pretty girl who's doing this.
You should have a talk with her. You know.
I don't even want to bother. I don't want to go there.
That's funny.
Okay, so the combination of that. So it's either the Christmas music or it's the Pop 40 station.
Which is just as bad.
Almost. I mean, it's not quite as much a loop with the Top 40 station. There are the same things going on over and over again, but there are also ones they throw in there once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the Christmas thing is just... I mean, there are lots of Christmas songs out there, sure, but...
you know, just... It's actually, you know, I'm probably very, very happy that I don't work in an environment where there's piped in music. I mean, the dentist office with the easy listening.
Mm-hmm.
My dentist listens to just a terrestrial easy listening show, so there's commercials and stuff, but in even a little bit of morning DJ, you know.
Yeah.
But I swear, I hear like the same two songs every time
Absolutely.
I go. So like if I'm, they must play like the same songs like several times a day or at least every other day, and oh my god, I'd kill myself if I was a dentist.
It's funny because the computer room is adjacent, and when I was in there, there's no sound going on in the computer room.
Mm-hmm.
I believe someone said something like, oh, the intercom's broken? I wonder why that happened. but since I only work there 2 days a week, they just moved me out to a spot so they could put, you know, another person in there. So, yeah. I can't stay, you know, with the guys.
No tables you can camp out at, or
no, unfortunately, there's not enough room in there.
Oh well, Christmas will be over after what, 3-4 more working days there, so no big deal.
Yeah, that's true. I guess technically too, right? Because not going to be. I mean, it's Tuesday after next, and I'm going to be there Tuesday and Thursday this coming week. So yeah.
I think tolerating Christmas music is one of those things that gets rewired when you have kids, you know, in your brain. It's not that I disliked the Christmas music. I disliked that there, and actually, this is a false statement anymore, I think, at least from my perception, but it used to be there was never any new Christmas music. You know,
okay.
I mean, the stuff you hear on the loop, right? How many times can you hear Jingle Bell Rock, you know? And there was never much new Christmas music. And, you know, actually over the last couple of years, I've just, maybe it's because I'm on Pandora, maybe it's because, you know, I'm actually not listening to the terrestrial Christmas stations, that I'm actually getting some more stuff. And I like hearing new Christmas songs, new takes on Christmas songs, things like that. But even some of the old standards I enjoy a lot more because I have kids, and it's just part of that whole rewiring of your brain that happens, I think.
At least, I hope you don't have, like, Christmas shoes on that list.
Just the Patton Oswalt critique of Christmas shoes.
Yeah.
Speaking of...
It was almost Christmas time!
Have you seen the John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John Christmas song?
I only saw a piece of it on The Daily Show, or Colbert was one of those,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, what the hell is that?
And it didn't force you to go watch it?
No.
But you just...
That was enough.
The one that I saw was only, you know, like maybe 8-9 seconds of it on The Daily Show.
Yeah, that was enough. No, I didn't need to experience that.
But you need to experience the train wreck of the
This isn't Gugnev style, right? This isn't awesome at the same time as being like, what the fuck? This is just what the fuck.
Yeah, this is awful. The John Travolta song. I don't see how anyone thought that was a good idea. It's so bad. Mm-hmm. You can't believe it wasn't a joke. You know,
what, you like this wasn't on Funny or Die.
Yes, I mean it. Maybe the joke's on us because it is a joke, and they're not. You know, they haven't played their hand yet. But it is. It seems to be a horrible, sincere Christmas song.
Is it still people trying to like? Is it like still people trying to convince us that John Travolta isn't really gay?
Maybe. I don't know. You saw the dance. You saw the little two-step dance shuffle thing that they're doing. That's not convincing anyone in the direction that they're trying to, if they are. It's so crazy. You know, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, his house or, like, aerial photos of his house.
I have. He has a
runway that goes right up to his, you know, he can land a plane and basically park in the driveway.
And doesn't he have, like, an actual jumbo jet?
Yeah, he has a 747.
Yeah.
But in the video, he's flying in and he parks his plane right in the driveway, right next to the house, you know, and he's walking up and Olivia Newton-John's in his house coming the other way. They're singing and they're all happy. It's just fucking crazy.
Can you imagine the noise when that thing takes off? If it was right next to your fucking house.
Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, the runway might have been, you know, a little bit off, but I mean, yeah, even the taxi would be noisy. Oh, go watch the John Travolta video if you haven't seen it.
A 747, that requires a long runway. This guy has lots of space.
That's another thing. You know, look for, you know, the sites that kind of like bookmark, you know, famous things for Google Maps and go check out John Travolta's house in Google Satellite View. It's fucking fucked up.
How did he get so rich that he was able to afford a 747?
Saturday Night Fever. Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, but, you know, that's, you know, 20, 30 million. That's not over 100 million.
The pyramid scheme of the Scientology.
It's crazy. Crazy that a dude has that much money.
Yeah, Greg doesn't want to watch the video. I suggest to most of you, you go watch it, because you'll just be like, how did this get made? It should be featured on Paul Scheer's podcast. Even though it's not a movie, it should still be featured. It's not a movie.
They just did their first TV movie.
Oh, did they?
They did the Lindsay Lohan, Liz Taylor movie.
Okay. Well, speaking of Paul Scheer and the guys on The League, I was pretty rough on them, not on the show, but on Twitter and whatnot, about how the first half of this season was... Like, what the fuck happened? I thought maybe they fired their whole writing staff and, like, got new ones. Maybe something like that happened. But the last... 4 episodes is back on. It's fun. Okay. I'm like, but like, you know, after 4 seasons, you know, this 5th season was horrible. And not just horrible compared to what I was expecting. It's just like, there was one episode which was, I didn't laugh once, you know, it was just bad.
That accurately reproduces my experience watching The League in general. Oh. I just don't find it funny. Okay. I just, I don't know what it is. It's just not. It's not really funny to me.
I don't know. I think some of the jokes are, you know, just, you know, some of the characters, especially like the girl, you know, the guy, Kevin's wife. Can't think of her name. You know, like this whole season up until this last episode, she hasn't had any really good lines. But you know, she is back to like, oh yeah, that's Jenny. That's, you know, Jenny actually had some good zingers in there. And then there's you know, Rafi. Whenever Rafi's in it. The guy that's on
Jason Mantzoukas,
yeah. When Rafi's on there, oh, he gets the choicest lines. You know, he has the best character. the non sequitur at the end of this last episode, Deion Sanders bought Andre's house, and last season, Dirty Randy, which was Seth Rogen and Rafi. They shot a porno in Andre's house on his couch and everything, just to freak him out, skeeze him out, because there's all the gooey stuff there. Uh-huh. And Andre sold it to Deion Sanders, and they were like, question whether he had to disclose that, right? Whether it was like a jizz disclosure or something. And the non sequitur at the end was Dirty Randy, Rafi shooting a new porno in there, and Deion Sanders walks in. And just the couple of lines that Seth Rogen has and that Jason Mantzoukas has, it was really funny.
I guess it sort of reminds me of, I feel the same way about Always Sunny. I can get why people, you know, it's like, I get why people think it's funny. Mm-hmm. It's just I don't. And the same way I feel with you know, The League and Always Sunny. I just, okay. People enjoy it. And it's not like other things where people enjoy things like Big Bang Theory or even worse, like 2.5 Men or something like that. And you're just like, come on, how can you watch that, you know, that stuff that is the worst? But
there is, you know, I enjoy the shows you like, you know, Community, whatnot. And I enjoy the Community because they're smart and funny. Nothing makes me laugh like The League. When The League is good, nothing makes me laugh at a TV like The League does.
Have you tried, like, Children's Hospital? And
Yeah. I mean, I've watched several Children's Hospitals. I enjoy Children's Hospital. But and I like that kind of that group of guys, the, mm-hmm. the Paul Scheer, Rob Corddry, you know, that kind of group, you know, yeah. you know that incestuous cameo.
It's really, what it is, it's the UCB. It's a UCB thing.
Yeah, the Party Down guys, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like that group, but yeah, nothing, the writing, the jokes, not the delivery, nothing makes me laugh like The League does. So,
speaking of sports, we haven't even talked about the NHL.
Guys are fucking idiots. They, you know, it was, what, 8 years ago. They lost the whole season because of this mm-hmm. lockout. Now they've lost, like, half the season, if not the whole thing. They're never going to be more than the third or fourth rate national professional sports league, you know, by doing this kind of shit, you know? I mean, they're like, oh, things are starting to turn up. They're getting a good national audience. Oh, wait, they cancel a fucking season. You know, it's like the same thing happened 8 years ago. You know, they were talking about, oh, hey, everything's coming together. Oh.
What's the deal? Why is there such an impasse?
I haven't really involved myself too much with it. I never, even when I was way into hockey, I wasn't so much into the front office stuff, you know, the.
I mean, I understand why the impasse has happened in baseball. I mean, the fact of the matter was that baseball, even though it's not as popular as football, baseball makes by far the most money of any of these sports. Why? Because there are 162 games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they make ridiculous amounts of money. And the thing was that the players were the ones who were basically doing most of the work in order to make them play, and they were not getting mm-hmm. enough of a share. And so I was really on the player's side with this, because there's no reason why the owners should, simply because they own a team, make 75%, you know, 85% of all their money and only give out 15%.
Yeah. I don't know what the breakdown is for the hockey owners. But, I mean, I agree with you. You know, you should take a profit off the top, right?
Yeah.
Maybe 20%, you know, but, you know, the rest of that should go into running the business, which includes, you know, paying the talent.
You pay the people who make you the money. So I was on the player's side, even though it wasn't, it wasn't everything that I, you can't, it's like, there were nuances that, you know, I didn't appreciate about the player's position, but
right,
you can't. And when you're doing collective bargaining, you can't.
I don't know the details. You know, all the European players are playing in Europe. You know, they're making not the big bucks, but they're playing hockey. They're making some money. There's a story I heard on the radio, you know, about, like, the Russian league and, like, how, you know, it's kind of a boon for them, but, you know, it could end any day, you know?
So, yeah.
As soon as the NHL ends the lockout, those players are flying home to start practicing. So.
Well, I guess they wouldn't need as much practice, right? Because they're actually playing. Well,
team practice, you know? Probably less conditioning.
Less conditioning, yeah. You don't have to do, like, the whole month there. It's not like spring training or preseason football or something like that, where it's like 6 weeks of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so I really haven't been paying too much attention to the hockey. If there's games on, you know, I'll start watching them. But until then, I got plenty of other things to worry about.
Speaking of things to worry about, I hesitate to bring this up a bit, but it is a day after a horrible, ridiculous tragedy. And the only thing I want to bring up is, you know, I was asking my sister how do you talk to Ava about this? Because Ava probably doesn't know about it now, but mm-hmm. she'll get word of it one way or another within the next couple of days. Either hearing it, you know, on the playground or something like that. She'll hear something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the thing is that I think that a real problem here is the way that the news covers these situations. I mean, I don't want to get into the actual event itself, but the way the news covers things short circuits our brains because it over, I mean, they overdo it like crazy, and have this constant coverage. Like, you know, I was at home on Friday, so I had, you know, had it tuned in and it was just this constant coverage. They were saying the same things over and over again, and then getting new information. All of it, almost all of it was wrong, but they kept reporting and reporting and reporting. And I think just that constant reinforcement and just constant, you know, only concentrating on that as opposed to anything else, short circuits our risk calculation even more. I mean,
there's that. I mean, Hurricane Sandy was the same kind of thing, right? They showed over and over and over the same part of Boardwalk being washed away. So everyone thinks that Atlantic City's Boardwalk is completely gone and Atlantic City's been washed away, where, you know, it was only a short portion of the Boardwalk. You know, in general, most of the Boardwalk's okay, but, you know, tourism is way down and a lot of people think that, you know, there's nothing to go tour there. So, and just because they showed the same clip, the same B-roll 500 times. You know, and this is the same kind of thing. You're going to see, I haven't seen any of the video footage yet. I don't want to see any of the video footage. It's,
I mean, the video footage was essentially mostly tame, aside from, aside from, like, some, I think CNN started to interview kids, and people were like, don't do that, don't do that. But they all eventually did, so.
What is?
But
their...
the kids don't know. The kids are just kind of, they're not like screaming and crying. They're just kind of like, yeah, well, I was there and I heard pop pop pop, because they don't they don't process it emotionally like you and I would. So it doesn't overwhelm them like it would us.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's sick to think about. I don't want to really get into it.
Yeah, I just want to bring it up because it's like, how do you tell? Yeah, I mean, you're fortunate enough you don't have to tell your kids about it, because it's not going to be something that comes up. Just, and it's not, but I mean, you don't have to worry about it, because these things are, you know, the likelihood of these things happening.
Right, you said the whole risk calculation. You're still much, much more likely to die on your way home from work, so. Yeah, let's get on to a new subject.
Yeah.
I, Black Friday-ish, that weekend, I ordered a new... I've been eyeing up... I wanted to get something new for my home theater PC, you know, set up. Because what I used to have was my Generation 1 modded Xbox. And we used using that to play, you know, video files. I could play Xvids fine. And that was great until everyone who packaged up TV shows and put them on Usenet stopped packaging my Xvid. They started just doing them in H.264, and the Xbox couldn't decode H.264. So I was looking for... My goals were something quiet and small I could put next to the TV. Run...
Excuse me.
Oh. Noises coming from Greg's throat.
It was just my throat.
Something small and quiet I could put next to the TV. Something that could play video. Maybe as a bonus, it could also run some server software. Maybe as a double bonus, it could run some virtualization, so I could have like a Windows VM in there, you know, whatnot. And I didn't really find anything with performance or price that I liked, you know, a while ago. But I did find, and I think I might have talked about it, I got what Western Digital makes, these little media players. They call it WDTV. And they have a bunch of different versions. The one I got was the Live Plus. Tiny little box. About 4 inches by 4 inches, 4 inches by 5 inches, something like that. And it had, crazy, it actually had component video out, which I needed for my TV, which no device today comes with component video out. You know, and it came with component video out. And a network port, and it could decode, you know, like 1080p type video it can actually decode. This tiny little box has a pretty good processor in it. And so I was using that, but its software wasn't the best. You know, the way it could connect to network shares and things like that. It preferred to go over the DLNA. And my NAS had DLNA, but like getting it to rescan and stuff was a pain. Really didn't work all that. The workflow wasn't that great. So over Black Friday, I was on the hunt for another home theater PC. On Newegg, trying to figure out what to get. You know, I knew a shuttle PC or something would be powerful enough. But the price was also a little bit higher. You know, I didn't want to pay $500, $600 for it. If I was paying
I'm
that
shrinking,
much... Oh, it was the chair leaking. The
chair is leaky, yeah.
And I was like, if I'm going to spend that much money, I might as well just get a Mac Mini, you know, and just be done with it, right, and have something that's easy to use and be, you know, and work and whatnot. So I was looking at some of these other little things, and the one I chose was this Foxconn box that has the AMD Fusion in it, which is kind of the low power. It's like the Intel Atom processor.
Okay.
It's AMD Fusion, so it has integrated video and whatnot. The thing's like a dual core 1.8 gigahertz, has a ATI something something, you know, video chip in it. When I bought the thing from Newegg on Black Friday, you buy this bare bones, they're giving away a 60 gig SSD to go with it. 60 gigs is not huge for data storage, but for this thing, you are getting really short. So I put that in it, got 8 gigs of RAM for it, and I wasn't sure if I could do the virtualization on the thing or not. Yeah, Greg's still laughing about his chair situation.
Back up we go. All right.
Get a new gas cylinder for that thing.
Yeah.
It's funny, you're losing all the weight, and now the chair is failing. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's not enough pressure to seal the leak, and now it's coming out. Maybe before you had enough pressure on it to seal the leak.
Got
to
stop this diet, then.
Yeah, so I'm running a version of Ubuntu on there that's a nice lightweight. It's actually called Lubuntu, lightweight Ubuntu. And I'm using Xbox Media Center as the player. And I'm using the whole Usenet workflow that I was using before. And actually, it made it a little bit better. There's an app called Sickbeard, which doesn't do the downloading, but it does the TV show matching. So instead of me like trying to write my patterns and match it, and I was always getting like doubles of shows and stuff like that, Sickbeard has some great knowledge of just downloading the show once, you know, getting a good version of the show, things like that. So yeah, I'm really happy with that part of the workflow. I'm using Sun's VirtualBox or Oracle's VirtualBox, and I have a little Windows VM that doesn't do much on there, but it's like a Windows console for when I need it. And have an external 2TB hard drive hooked up to it for all the storage. So got the new set-top box. I'm able to turn off that 1U noisy server out in the garage because I don't need it for virtualization anymore. And now I'm working on getting everything off of the NAS. Once I get the NAS, I'm going to sell the NAS, get some money, maybe even make all my money back for the box. Then I'll pick up another external 2D, another 2TB drive, and I'll rsync to it. And then I'll like keep it at my mom's house. And or, you know, once it's rsynced, I'll just keep it up to sync over the network or something like that.
Well, why would you have it at your mom's house?
In case the house burns down.
Okay. What if they both burn down?
They're not going to burn down the same week. If a large enough meteor hits, yes.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll have to send it to someone in another state.
Yeah.
I think a mile away is good enough. I'm not. If a disaster that takes out the whole neighborhood.
Well, I mean, how much do you really need of that 2 terabytes?
Not much, but, you know, just backing up part of it. And it's 2 terabytes of data on one cheap hard drive.
Sure.
Which is prone to fail.
Yeah.
So re-getting all that data is just going to stink. I could have the 2 drives here in the house, but why not put it somewhere else to protect against fire also? It's not going to change the functionality.
Do you do like Carbonite? Something like that.
They don't run, none of those guys have a Linux client that I can use.
Oh.
So, and none of the unlimited ones will work on Linux. And all the ones that are pay per gigabyte cost too much to back up, like, yeah. To back up like 800 gigs. Which is how much data I have right now. Just too much. And I wouldn't really care if I lost the movies and music and stuff. I mean, it'd be not, I don't want to lose them, but right. I mean, it wouldn't be horrible. Yeah, so I'm just going to get another 2TB drive, put it somewhere else. You just keep sync to it.
A good way to, you know, prevent accidental deletion and stuff like that of things. Yeah. Yeah, I have a 2TB drive. I just ordered, like, as Jeff was setting the show up for last week's show, I just ordered, because I've been on an ordering spree for gifts and stuff like that, so I figured why not add one more to it. I just ordered a SSD, because I have one in the computer right now, but it's only, like, a 60 gig, so it only has, really, the operating system on it. It doesn't have anything else on it. Can't fit anything else on it, really.
Right.
But, so I'm putting all, you know, the other stuff that I load all the time onto it. And I have a 2 terabyte drive in there also. So I have a storage drive, and then I have like an active drive, but I'm just going to replace that with my,
right,
with a new SSD. And it's 250 megabytes or something like that. Yeah, 250 megabytes. 250 gigabytes for like $160.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's let me tell you which one it was so I can regale you with my gifts. Hold on a second. My orders. It is a SanDisk Extreme SSD 240 SATA 6.0 gigabyte per second solid state drive.
Fun.
It's list price is $400. And I got it for $163.
Oh, it's so, you know, it's so nice having the SSD in that set-top box because, you know, when I download the shows, they come in a bunch of RAR files, right? And
right.
It has to do the parity check and unpack it. And, you know, when it was unpacking it to my NAS, even though there's 4 spindles in the NAS, if it was un-RARing something and I was trying to watch something at the same time, the video would get all stuttery and choppy.
Mm.
You know, with this, it unpacks in seconds. It's insane. It's amazing. It's like one of the, like, there's certain things that SSDs really help out with, and there's certain things that they you don't notice a difference. This is one thing where it's like, you want to unroll this file? Poof, done.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Yeah, the only worry you have with SSDs is that if you write to them over and over and over and over and over again, eventually they fizzle.
They have, yeah, I mean, they're made for normal behavior, right?
Yeah.
So they have extra capacity in there that they'll burn into when they need to, you know, retire parts of the flash. But yeah, I mean, if you're doing it all day, every day, you know, writing, you know, you might have a problem in a few years, but most SSDs should last you a while.
Speaking of which, I mean, the same with hard drives, right? I mean, most hard drives will fail after a couple years anyway, so...
We see the same failure rate in SSDs. Actually, the industry as a whole sees the same failure rate in SSDs as they do in hard drives. I mean, they fail in completely different ways, right?
Right.
But they're not any more reliable. If you take a large enough sample of both, you're going to see, you know, relatively equal failure rates.
Did you read this article about the new spin transfer RAM?
Spin transfer RAM. I have not.
This is, Toshiba revealed that they've been able to do what's called perpendicular magnetization. The idea is that you store memory not in terms of ones or zeros, in terms of, you know, off or on, but actually in terms of spin state for the electron, so up or down. And it's apparently 90% less power consumption in your RAM. And, like, just as fast, if not faster.
That's cool.
And it cuts leaks to zero in operation and standby in terms of current. And
there was another technology that I was hearing a little bit about.
And it's non-volatile RAM, too. So, I mean, just think about that.
Persistent RAM or something like that. It was a kind of NVRAM that, you know, it wasn't flash memory, but it wasn't, like, DRAM, where it needs power energized, you know, to keep its state. It could keep its state without that.
That's volatile RAM. So the non-volatile is like an SSD. Is it? It stays in that state no matter what. But
in storage industry, when you hear NVRAM, non-volatile RAM, that is typically battery backed up RAM. So you got normal RAM chips on a card which has a lithium ion battery or a supercapacitor. And like our new cards are super caps instead of batteries. So the batteries don't fail and need replaced like they did in the old cards. But, you know, the super caps have to work, even though they work in a different way because they can't. So the NVRAM would actually keep the RAM, the battery backed NVRAM would keep the RAM energized for like up to 2 or 3 weeks, right? And what this does is you have your storage appliance, like your NetApp or something like that, and a write comes into the appliance, and the appliance can acknowledge it and say, write received, before it actually writes it to disk. and it can tell the client that it's received because it has it in this battery backed up RAM. So if the power goes out right then before it makes it to disk, it'll stay in that RAM for several weeks until they can repair the system, get the power back on. And when the power back's on, the software will say, hey, there's stuff in the RAM, let's write that to disk. With the SuperCap, it's a little bit different. The SuperCap, when the system powers off, it'll take the stuff that's in RAM, it'll write that to an onboard flash on the NVRAM card, because the SuperCap can't power it for weeks and weeks and weeks. It'll just power it for minutes, hours, you know, something like that. So it'll actually write it to flash and then, you know, shut down. But SuperCaps don't have the lifetime issues that lithium ion has, so. And they're smaller and lighter, less resources.
No, I mean, that's cool. I mean, the thing about the current SRAM and DRAM stuff that's in your machine is that how long is that data in there? Essentially, you can't time it. I mean, it's on the level of not even nanoseconds. It's faster than
If you freeze the chips first. Did you ever see that hack? Hear about the hack? There's a hack where you can, like, freeze the RAM chip, like with, like, I don't know if you need liquid nitrogen or something, but something really cool. You freeze the RAM chip, you can pull it out, and and it'll persist, and you can reinsert it.
Really?
Yeah, if you make it really cold.
Hmm. Must be liquid nitrogen in order to get.
I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't know how cold or anything, but there was a thing about freezing RAM. Let's see.
But yeah, so you need to. So it doesn't store it for any appreciable amount of time. It's stored and it's gone, but it's instantly refreshed with when you have power. But yeah, once you lose power, boom. But no, I have not seen
pulling. Want to break into a computer's encrypted hard drive? Just blast the machine's memory with a chip of. This is on Fox News, so it's not written like the research paper, right? Mm-hmm. Blast the memory chip with a burst of cold air. Princeton University demonstrated a novel low-tech way hackers could get the memory.
How would that help breaking into?
Well, because when you log into an encrypted hard drive, you put in your passphrase, the key stored in memory, so it can access, keep the hard drive unlocked, right? You know, and turn off the computer, that goes away. Hard drive locks. But if you can keep the data on the chip, pull the chip out of the computer, put it into your RAM sucking hardware.
I mean, you saw that access to the computer while it was on.
Right. The screen might be locked, though. You know.
What?
So say it's Windows, and say, you know, the screensaver's on and it's locked, right? Uh-huh. If you did it this way, you could get the stuff off the RAM.
Would that actually work? I mean, if I'd have to read into that, because you couldn't just then put the memory into another chip and then take the hard drive out and put it in and then have it, oh, yeah, Windows recognizes
here,
that this.
Let's see. No, I mean, I mean, the attack even works when the DRAM chip is removed and transferred to a machine that is set up by the hacker. Special programs were then used to correct errors in recovered memory contents and reconstruct the keys used for encryption. Yeah, so, I mean, once... It's like the whole problem with Blu-ray DVD, right? Something has to decrypt it so you can watch it on TV, right? Once it's decrypted, the data is in the system somewhere, and hackers can get to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole point is thinking that you couldn't pull a RAM chip out, which has all this...
Right.
When the RAM chip's on the motherboard, there's all kinds of secret data there. The moment it comes off the motherboard, all the secret data's gone, right? I mean, that's what you said earlier. Well, if you make it cold, it stays in there, and you can...
Some of it. Enough that you can rebuild it,
yeah. And throw it into a new computer, throw it into a system specifically made for sucking the contents out of the RAM, right? And...
I like to see the failure rate on that particular technique, because I bet, you know, you do it 100 times and get it done once and they didn't write a research paper about it. I bet it's not like people are now jumping in, you know, going into companies and...
Let's see. So researchers said that the results suggest that faith in strength of disk encryption may be misplaced, arguing that moderately skilled attacker can bypass many widely used encryption products, including BitLocker, Apple's FileVault, open source TrueCrypt, and DMCrypt.
So you have to get into wherever this computer is, have to bring your own... Well,
what about a laptop? You steal a laptop from... You know, you target a guy. Right. You know, oh, there's Greg Weiss. He goes to Starbucks.
Uh-huh.
You know, let me heist his laptop, which I know is going to be sleeping in his backpack, right? And he probably, you know, I know he uses disk encryption. So if I actually have to reboot his computer, I'm screwed. But if I can, you take the bottom off of his thing, you freeze his, you know, you have an error, so the RAM doesn't come out. So you're protected there. There you go. Or does the RAM, no, the RAM doesn't come out of yours. So
yeah,
the memory, the disk module can come out, I think, right?
I have no idea. I know you can't upgrade the RAM or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think so. The disk module is upgradable though. So you're protected, but I mean that's probably a more use case, right? Someone heists a laptop that's sleeping, freeze the RAM, pull the RAM out, get the disk encryption off.
Throw a gig of RAM at it.
Throw a gig of RAM at it. Yeah.
Oh, hackers. That was hackers, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually used that like last week. I'm like, quick, throw a gig of RAM at it.
Okay, it's been a long pre-show.
A lot better than last week's.
Yeah.
I couldn't carry a conversation in a bucket last week.
It happens. A couple weeks ago I had a really bad show too, so it's okay. Oh, we didn't even talk about my
Oh yeah.
I had a sprain. It's
nothing. Too much masturbation.
Yeah. Really, it's actually I've been doing some weightlifting, minor stuff, but just my this wrist got a little bit thrown out of whack because of it, and it actually kept getting worse and worse. And then at one point, I just landed on bed like this, and
gotcha.
So I was like, all right, I'll put it into a little sprain. What's this little stint for a while?
Yeah, just mobilize it so it doesn't get any worse. Gotcha. I think it's beer time.
Beer time.